Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up podcast. This is Mark Dick. I'm your host, and I am very glad that you're listening to the show today. This is the podcast about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the crazy things that we do to bring the good stuff to the people, especially during this holiday season. Oh my gosh. Thanksgiving has just ended in the United States. Everyone's full on Christmas rush now. Even our local coffee shop where my wife Cindy works is going crazy making little decorated cookie boxes, and I'm taking orders for braided loaves out of my backyard bakery, and everything on Instagram, if you follow bakeries like I do, has shifted in a week. It was pies, everything pies, and then dinner rolls and buns and all of that stuff. And now everything I see is panettone and pandoro and stollen and that kind of stuff, because everybody's gearing up for Christmas and the holidays. I even saw Polestar Hearth. I saw Jesse making chocolate babkas at his place. And he likes to bake everything dark, and so these were some nice dark chocolate babkas with dark chocolate as well, I think. So good for you. Good for everybody that's baking the extra special stuff over the next couple of weeks. And again, as I've said before, you know, pace yourself. You got to make it all the way to New Year's Eve here, and then you can take a break. So don't start out of the gate too quick. I won't say slow and steady, because slow just isn't an option this month, but steady wins the race. And it's, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint this month. So you know, work within yourself, watch how you're lifting those tubs. And what else is going on? I'm talking from a handheld microphone today because I'm packing up all my gear. On Thursday morning, I'm heading out to New York City for a long weekend of meetings and visits with friends of mine, but also some bakery visits as well. And I'm taking the gear with me, and I'm hoping to record a couple of shows live in New York. Not necessarily on Saturday night, but possibly. We're still working out the details. So we'll see how it goes. It's going to be a little bit of a challenge. One of the bakeries that I had set things up to go talk to, they lost two bakers just after Thanksgiving. So they're going a little crazy right now. If you've ever been through the person quits just before Christmas routine before, you will know that that sucks. And I've been through it, and I'm sure a lot of you have been through it. It's never a good thing. So we'll see if there's time to record a show, or I might just have to buy a bunch of food and give away a wave, and then schedule something for January when things slow down. But we'll see how it goes. The reason I'm going out to New York is for another thing that I do that's not related to the show necessarily, but kind of is. I'm, in addition to baking and podcasting, I'm a coach for an online program called the Alt MBA that's started by a pretty famous marketing teacher named Seth Godin. If you're into marketing, you're into Seth. If you're not into marketing, maybe you haven't heard of him. But this Alt MBA is a leadership and change course, and I'm really lucky to be a coach. And once a year, they have a big coach meetup. So there's going to be 75 of us from all around the world meeting for the long weekend and hanging out together and working on stuff together. And so that should be a lot of fun. I mention it because even though I had the idea for this podcast before I took the Alt MBA course, I never would have launched it without the support of the coaches in the Alt MBA and the support of my fellow students and that kind of thing. So I'm very grateful to that program and those people, because this show probably would still be a dream if it wasn't for my friends in the Alt MBA giving me the push to actually do this and to stop hiding. So thanks to all the Alt MBA guys that listen to this show, and let's keep on the baking track, will ya? While I'm out in New York, I have promised a bunch of guys that we've got a planned thing at the Chelsea Market, and I'm going to take them over to Amy's Breads, and we're going to do a bit of a tasting as best we can over there, given that I've given them no notice. But we'll see if what they have in stock, and I'm going to show some wares of a very excellent New York bakery, and hopefully we can do a couple more while we're out there as well. So that'll be fun. Oh, hey, I never mentioned, we have a guest today on the show. Our guest is a very lovely woman named Suzanne Gessler. And Suzanne is the owner of Penny Loaf Bakery in Winnipeg, Manitoba. And I just stumbled upon Penny Loaf because Cindy made me go there during our Ontario trip on the way home. We stopped in at Penny Loaf and it blew me away. What an amazing little bakery. And as soon as we were there and visited with some of the folks, I right away tried to get Suzanne on the show so she could share her story with all of you. So we're going to be doing that right away here. So Suzanne's really neat. She comes at this, I'm not going to say self-taught because she went to school, but this is certainly a second career for her after spending an awful lot of time doing social work and city planning in the city of Winnipeg. She switched to the baking life. And we talk a lot about how, you know, a really good bakery can make a neighborhood. And so in a way, she's continuing her social work and her city planning work at the community level, right on the street with Penny Loaf Bakery. So I thought that was a pretty cool connection. So let's give it a listen. Here's a chat that I had just last week with the entertaining and lovely Suzanne Gessler from Penny Loaf Bakery in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Awesome. Well, nice to meet you for sure. I got to say, like, I think I mentioned this in one of the emails, but Cindy and I stopped in to see you guys at the end of a 3-week tour of Ontario, where we were actually driving all over the place. I think we did like 8,000 kilometers. And
wow.
And we went to an awful lot of bakeries. And, yeah. and it wasn't the purpose necessarily, but we just can't help ourselves. Eh? And so,
yeah, I understand that need.
You know, we drove out to Winnipeg the first night and stayed with a former employee of ours.
Yeah.
And a good friend. And then we were going to come to your place, and but it was on a day you were closed. I think it was Sunday or something, like, or Monday.
Mondays were closed. Yeah.
And then on the way back, we're just getting gas, and we're going home. We were driving home from Kenora, which is like 10 hours or something.
Yeah.
And Cindy's like, no, well, we should stop because they're open today. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh God, I don't want to.
No more croissants, please.
Like, I could just hit the bypass, you know, and life is good. But we did. We came and we found your place, and I'm so glad we did, because it's completely charming. Like, it was it was one of those crazy, like, I'd never been on that street before. And
yeah.
It was that kind of cloudy, cool day. And mm-hmm. You're in a little house, right?
It's an old house. Yeah.
It just looked glorious. And we go inside, and then, you know, and I'm like, okay, how long can we stay here now? and the young woman at the front was really busy in that. And then I saw the Bread Bakers Guild sticker on your window, and I said, okay, I've got an in. And
so yeah.
And she goes, oh, come on in the back. And so we got to meet
Sarah and Sarah. I think it was Sarah too. Yeah.
And had a really good chat.
So you met the oven.
Yeah. That's a glorious beast as well.
That is a beast. Yeah. We can definitely talk about that oven for sure. That's the best part of the bakery.
It was really cool. So it was just an awesome visit. And then we got, you know, some great bread, and we were eating bread and pastries all the way home. So it was good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Good.
So it was really excellent. So,
Well, I'm glad you stopped by for sure.
So tell me more about Penny Loaf. Like, how long have you been open, and how long have you been there?
So it's been 4 years. We're going into our fourth year.
Nice.
So the fall is like our anniversary.
Yeah.
And I don't know. What can I tell you about it? It's like a whirlwind. So yeah. this wasn't my first professional job.
Right.
I don't know whether you know, creeped around my Facebook page.
Oh, I sure did.
Anything else, you know, about me. Yeah, it's like I feel kind of like when I looked at, I've listened to some of your podcasts now, and I look at like, you know, the roster of people who are on there. I'm like, oh my God, I'm like a sham artist, you know, you know, that like imposter sort of syndrome, you know? So I was, do you want me to just tell you a bit about how I came to be?
Okay. Oh, please do.
So I've lived in Winnipeg all my life. I always really liked baking. I just never thought, well, this is a career choice that, you know, would be something that I would, you know, make a, well, career is kind of like a,
yeah.
At this point, we're still a new bakery, you know, right. Like, you know, the 5-year mark where people say, you know, if you can make it, especially if you can make it in Winnipeg after 5 years, you're pretty, basically good to go.
Nice.
Like educational pursuits were, I started off, I got an arts degree, I went to university, and then I got a social work degree.
Right.
And I really cared about, I still care about these things, but, I really cared about poverty issues in the city.
Right.
And, that became sort of what I was, passionate about for like, you know, almost 15 years.
Right.
And so I worked in the inner city, and then I got I was trying to figure out, okay, well now what further education am I going to get with this? So, you know, I thought about law, I thought about all sorts of things, and I decided on city planning.
Right.
So I have a master's in city planning as well. And, I worked on lots of really great projects. I worked for, you know, several levels of government. I worked for, some universities, and then I got burnt out. I worked on homeless issues and affordable mm-hmm. housing. And about, I don't know, like 5-6 years ago, I just got burnt out. And
yeah.
I just
thought, oh, sure.
I can't do this anymore. And, you know, that was a bit of a, that was an early midlife career crisis. And, you know, there was, you know, a year where I just went, like, what am I going to do? I drove my husband nuts, you know, because forever I was like, this was my passion,
sure. Yeah.
You know, helping the population and, trying to do good in my community. And then I kind of spent a year in hiding and trying to figure out what to do. I read, you know, What Color's Your Parachute, and, found this book called If You Knew Who You Were, You Could Be Who You Are.
Right.
You know, did like a lot of soul searching, and I realized a couple things. I realized I wanted to be my own boss. That was really important to me. I just, you know, I sort of got tired of being under other people's thumbs, and I just wanted to, you know, be a leader in whatever I was doing, something small. Like, I wasn't looking for like, you know, saving the world anymore. I just thought those were lofty goals for a decade and a half. And then I just realized, you know, I need something, where I enjoy going to work. I enjoy the craft of whatever it is I'm doing. And so I thought, through all that process, baking came up, and then I looked at our a few programs across the country, and it was a really long wait list. I don't know whether you're familiar with our community college here. It's Red River College.
Right. Anyways, okay.
It's, you know, it's where you go to get those sorts of diplomas.
Sure.
And so I applied, and that took a little while because there's a long wait list to get into it. So I finally got in. And I spent a year going to school, and I just loved it. And I mean, I was, I wasn't 18 going to school.
Right.
I was, you know,
yeah,
you know, early 30s, and was like, you know, really motivated, and, you know, I knew how to study. And so I just like threw myself into it, and I loved it. Like, it was great. And you know, it's a year long program, so you don't really get to do, you know, that much. It's not like a European baking program.
Right.
Where you're like apprenticing since you're, you know, 14 and, you know, whatever.
Sure.
And maybe the fact that I knew so little about it kind of let me dream big. My whole plan was that I was going to get the diploma. I was going to write a business plan because I knew how to write plans because
yep.
I was a city planner. And, you know, I was going to find a building, and I was just going to do this thing. Well, God, I'm like a crazy person when I think about like where I was and where I am now. So so I did that. And I went, you have to do like an internship somewhere or a...
Right.
Follow someone around. So I went to California for 3 months, and I worked with a master baker out there.
Oh, did you? Where did you go in California?
Ponsford's place.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I know Craig. Yeah. Yeah.
So I went there and had an interesting time, and then lived out there, and I realized, oh my God, I'm like the most homesick person.
Sure.
I just like, yeah, I'm just not supposed to be anywhere else but Winnipeg, which is a rarity for people in Winnipeg to say, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I came back and I did another little internship, and then all the while I was writing this business plan, and then my husband was probably tired of me being unemployed and said, like, we got to find a building. Let's do this. So, yeah. So a year went by and we developed the building, or we located the spot where we're at. I had a really great landlord. He helped me, like, he basically was like my, he helped me, like, you know, develop everything in the building. It was really great. So that process was stressful, but like, I think as positive as it could be.
Right.
And then all of a sudden we were like opening the doors, and, I had met really great people through my, the Red River College program. So I kept telling two of my bakers, Lisa and Sarah, who are still with me, you know, as soon as I get this going, you're coming to work for me. And all of a sudden there we were like three, like literally we were just like hot off the presses, like never had, you know, none of us had ever like baked professionally before.
Right.
So, it was a bit of a, it was a bit chaotic in the beginning. And we've just like sort of really come like really far. Bread was the thing that we really wanted to focus on. The pastries and cakes and cookies and things like that were supposed to be a much smaller piece of the pie. And that just sort of blew up. People really liked those things. People love bread as well. But
sure.
But the bread was like a, oh my God, like, I don't know how much sourdough baking you do.
Oh yeah.
Sourdough baking you do.
Yep.
You know, it's like a, like, it's an art and it's a science.
Right.
And you know, we have like an 18-point, you know, plan that we follow now, and like a checklist, and we have a starter checklist, and like we monitor that thing like it's crazy. Because, you know, in the beginning we would have like, we'd have sourdough bread with holes that were like this big in
right.
it, and just, you know, had no idea why, because, you know, the chapter on sourdough bread baking in school was like 3 weeks long, and, you know, so artificial in terms of, you know, it's not like we had 20 years of experience and we knew exactly what we were doing.
Oh, for sure.
So the whole thing has really been like trial and error, and I absolutely could not have done any of this without like my employees that I
yeah.
have, you know? So, so here we are today. We've come a long way. I definitely had like sleepless nights. I think I probably lost a year of, or no, probably like 2 months of like sleep
sure.
throughout this whole period. You know what I mean? So
oh, yeah.
We're all a bunch of sleepy, sleep-deprived bakers, but now it's settling out a bit more. We've got our back of the house like processes pretty much down pat, I think.
Yeah.
And now it's just a matter of building the business so that we can, you know, move beyond the fifth year and actually become profitable. We've since bought the building.
Oh, nice.
So,
good for you.
So that's good. So we're not spending thousands of dollars in rent. You know, it's just going to someone else.
Sure.
It's actually a bit of an investment now for my husband and I. Yeah, so things are just sort of going, and, you know, every now and then I'll walk up to the bakery and I'll like pinch myself. I'll see it in like we just actually decorated some stuff outside for the holidays. So, you know, I'll walk up to it and I'm like, this is a charming bakery, you know?
Yes.
And it's all, I mean, this has been a work of many, many people, but in terms of what you see, like I've been collecting, for what reason, I don't know, like pretty plates and, you know, like the
yeah.
decor that you see on the inside, like I've just been sort of like hoarding that in my house for, you know, since I was, you know, a teenager. And all of a sudden there was this like place for all this stuff to go. And so it's not like it's a highly, you know, I didn't have a lot of money to spend on people like coming in and, you know, helping me decorate the place and make it, you know, like well curated, you know, it's all kind of, you know, it's all my stuff. So
yeah. And that's, you know, the story that you tell through words and also the
yeah.
decor and stuff is so important. And
yeah.
and there's a, for me anyways, there's a very specific, very unique story to your place. Like it looks so warm and cozy. Like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like a big hug. You know, and you've got that that awesome little patio beside with the
yeah.
big timbers and stuff. It's, you know, it was
yeah.
a really cold day when we were there, and
yeah.
I still just was wishing I could hang out on the patio. Like it's
yeah,
so
yeah.
nice.
My plan is in the future, I would really like to do this, is actually build that space out. Right. We have a patio in the back too, so we've got space to sit in the back, so we wouldn't lose all of our outdoor, you know, space to sit in the summer, because everybody in Winnipeg, when it's cold, when it's warm, you know, they just want to be outside.
Right,
so,
sure.
But I'd really like to build that out and have like a little, you know, still counter service, but like a little cafe there. Yeah. So if it works, there's room to expand still, you know, nice. But not so much expansion that like, I see a lot of businesses in Winnipeg, like small food service businesses, lots of people are expanding. And I'm like, people who started at the same time I did or opened up their shops, they're like, there's another location happening. And I think it's just the place where I am in my life. I'm not looking to, I just want this business to be successful right. in a small way. I want to have like good staff. I want people to enjoy coming to work in the morning. You know, you got to be somewhere for 8 hours every day. You might as well like
sure.
the people
oh, yeah.
with, and you know, and the food industry is, you know, doesn't have a great reputation for, you know, it's got like high turnover and
well, sure, it's
you know that sort of thing. So I want to try and keep people, you know. Yeah. So I just want it to be a small sort of self-contained little gem. You know?
Yeah,
that's my goal. You
for
know?
Sure, for sure. So, well, and tell me a bit about the neighborhood that you're in, because. It looks like an extremely neat area of the city.
So we're in Corydon, which was originally sort of like Little Italy.
Right.
So, I mean, it's changed throughout, you know, the decades.
Sure.
But it's sort of, I think, especially the little, like it's a really long street. So yeah. There's sort of little like pockets of businesses, you know, further down towards like, going further towards another big cross street is Osborne Village and yeah. or Osborne. Further down there, it's more, you know, bars and restaurants and stuff. But the little neighborhood that we're on the cross street, it's becoming sort of a little kind of like a European sort of feeling, you know, like small scale, you know, walkable, you know, lots of activities, you know, I mean, it's not as much activity in the winter when it's minus 45 right. in Winnipeg, but certainly in the summer and the more moderate months, it's like, it feels very, you know, approachable and like human scale.
Yeah.
There's a cheese shop that just opened up on the corner. There's a little grocery store, lots of local little businesses that, you know, hopefully my bakery being there contributes to that feel of that little like pocket in the neighborhood. There's a lot of students and like new families on right. one side. There's a lot of seniors in the neighborhood. So I think it's sort of it's in a way still city planning.
Yes.
You know, like what I've done is not you know, I when I think about how the building looks and how it's, you know, it's to the street. You know, I don't have a big parking lot right in front of my, right. my you know, it's not a strip mall. It looks sort of welcoming. And I always joke that we're like the neighborhood watch, like in the middle of the night, because there's always someone there, you know. So so it's still got sort of some of those things. And then contributing to the neighborhood in that way is like it's perfect. Like it sort of fits with, I haven't forgotten all my roots around that kind of stuff, you
sure.
know. And being a small business, so being able to employ people. Another key thing is I try and pay, probably to my own detriment, but I try and pay a living wage so that people can, like even my front of the house staff, like so that people can afford to, you know, live their lives and you know, these aren't high paying jobs, but certainly minimum wage doesn't seem like it's an appropriate thing for, you know, professionally trained bakers, you know,
no.
even though we're new at it, you know, but.
No, I hear you for sure. That was a big goal at my place that I got close to with my senior folks and never quite got there, but then I was open during the oil boom. So the living wage kept on running right. away from me.
yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not easy. That's the biggest expense is, you know, yeah. staff costs. So
I've been talking with a few different bakers that have worked really hard to structure their place to do
yeah.
that. And I got a lot of admiration for that, because like you said, not only is the food service industry gets a lot of knocks, but it's structured for that as well. Right. Because people aren't getting 40 hours, they aren't getting a living wage for when they are working, and
Yeah. Well, and you know, I'd love to give them benefits. Yeah. I will in the future. Yeah. You know, we just need to make a bit more money before I can start building those sorts of things in. And you know, like we're not like an inexpensive bakery because we try and one, I try and pay them a living wage. I try and use local ingredients as much as possible. And I mean, just, you know, I'm not in the business of trying to educate the public on what food costs,
right.
But this is actually what food costs, you know, the sort of, you know, the idea that you can go to Walmart or, you know, a grocery store and buy a loaf of bread for, you know, $3. I don't even know that you still can, cause I don't buy bread at the super, at a supermarket anymore. You know, this isn't me making like a ton of money, on this project, you know, it is actually just the cost of flour and supporting like local farmers and trying to have good quality ingredients. And, you know, we don't use anything sort of artificial. Sure. We don't add anything to our products. We make everything, you know, the things last, you know, in terms of prepping stuff, like it's like a week,
right?
It's like a cycle. That's it, you know? So to make everything by hand basically and provide the quality of food, pay my staff decently. It just, you know, bread ends up being $7 a loaf, you know?
Oh, sure. So, yeah. Yeah. I totally get that. It's you're at a fun place now hitting year five coming up is to say, okay, you know, is this enough? You know, like that area of what's enough for you, you know, like you mentioned, you know, the second and third location. And I always like, man, that always scared the heck out of me because I only saw triple the expenses.
Oh yeah.
To get that, you know, a tiny bit more profit maybe at the end of the year. And I said, oh, like, do I really have to leverage three times the flow?
And there aren't three of you, right?
Yeah.
Like there's only one of you that, you know, then has to spread your, you know, your resources to Tuesday and your personal
that's
resources.
The mom and pop dilemma, right? Like, you know, my hero with this is Tracy Mazzolini in Saskatoon that Christie's right? And she's got the Il Secondo, but you know, her brother Blair can be at the second store. She's at the first store, you know, the old one, and they can make that work, but you know, you almost need to find a cousin.
A business partner. Exactly. You know,
third store, right? Yeah.
My husband is my business partner in like the financial backing sense, but you know, it's really, I mean, I rely on my staff to help me a lot. It's me at the end of the day, you know, if someone doesn't come in for a shift or something terrible happens, like, you know, it's like being on call 24 hours a day for it, or at least it was. It's getting easier now. Sure. I just want to be good at this place first. And then, you know, we go to farmers markets and things like that. So it's sort of like having, you know, sort of satellite locations that you can go to. So there are ways of still like getting the product to different parts of the city.
Sure.
Without having to have another location. So I don't know. I just want it to be, you know, it's just a mom shop right now, but just small,
exactly,
you know, just have it be like not a destination necessarily, but you know, just like a little good quality place.
And you have a neighborhood there that really looks like that you fit and it fits and it flows, and you know I've got some, you know, some friends in different cities now that have got that as well. And it's a treat, but it takes work. Right. And so, you know, it can be a lifelong project to have your place thrive and in the neighborhood and say, okay, this is the piece of, you know, all your city planning work. And now it's just shrunk down to maybe, you know, today it's a building and maybe it's a three block radius, right? Like,
for sure. Well, and I'd love to be able to, you know, when I have more time, figure out a way to really kind of strengthen the little block that we're in or the little like sort of piece of cordon that we're on, you know. I don't know how, I'm not entirely sure how the decisions get made on like what gets to go into that neighborhood, but like it would be so great if we could attract a small like charcuterie butcher shop and, you know, sort of round out the neighborhood in terms of having some of those more, small scale. I mean, you know what, like the world is going to hell, right? Yep. So like maybe this, you know, it seems like it's trendy and fashionable to sort of work on a smaller scale, but we may end up having to sort of move into those directions anyway. So yeah. I always think like, oh my God, if the end of the world came and we had no electricity, everyone's going to be using my oven.
Exactly.
You know? Yep. So, I mean, wood for all its, you know, it's not, it doesn't feel great to constantly be burning wood, but at least it's a renewable resource.
Well, for sure.
You know,
for sure. Well, and when the revolution comes, you can start dismantling the hardware store or something and burning
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a fella in town here that's passed away now, but you know, similar story to what we're talking about. He owned a pizza shop right downtown, you know, across from Victoria Park. And, you know, later in his life, you know, after he'd been doing it 25 years or whatever, he had some money and very slowly started buying up the entire block.
Oh, wow.
And then had a say in what it's going to be, right? So, you know, sponsored a guy that started a pub and the sushi place beside that. So it's this kind of little restaurant row. Sort of pulling the strings behind the scenes saying, okay, I don't want to be isolated amongst office buildings in downtown Regina. Right.
So
this kind of thing. And, you know,
And I mean, it just benefits all the businesses around if, you know, you've got a few anchor tenants who are, you know, drawing people towards you, and then it just sort of builds on itself. Yeah. And again, that is city planning.
Oh,
you know?
For sure.
For sure.
So, yeah. So it's maybe at first glance, it's a big shift, but maybe not, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's a lot less, you know, tackling things on like a smaller scale, like a local level is, it's a bit easier than solving all the homeless problems in Winnipeg.
Sure. But like that is tough. My American friends think that it's just all, you know, unicorns and rainbows up here, right? But it's,
yeah. No, it's definitely
it's
not.
It's real life the same way. I admire you doing it. My daughter is, she's just finishing up her arts education degree, but part of doing that is she's, you know, teaching in high schools and teaching the real history or the revised history, depending on your point of view, you know, bringing a lot more First Nations culture into the lessons. And, you know, it's, and spending more time in that community. And I'll tell you, it's like, it's changed Cindy and I a ton, just learning about what was going on all around us, you know?
Yeah.
But experiencing the resistance to it from other folks to saying, I don't want to talk about that is an interesting thing as well. And it's fascinating. So I can imagine quite clearly how 15 years of that would be too much.
It would burn you out. Yeah.
I had 20 years of corporate work where you know, working for the provincial government, where you've got bureaucracy eating your soul away. You know,
Well, that was it. That was largely it. I spent a lot of time at the province.
What I didn't have was that sort of social work, social justice side of things that would have just been eating at my heart, you know? So it's like good for you for doing it. But then, you know, switching gears while you still could bring the joy to people, you know? I don't know how folks don't get like when I, you know, you meet so many people that have got 30 years in that and they seem really kind of bitter and there's walls up. And anyone that doesn't do that, I just admire them. To say like, I can contribute and survive.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, and they say that, back when I was having my career crisis, you know, that like, it's pretty typical now that people change their careers.
Sure.
Like I think it was like 7 times. So, you know, I'm on my way, but I've got it. I'm like, what am I going to do next? What will I do? Yeah. What's the last thing on my bucket list in terms of career? No.
Oh man.
I think that's it.
You're going to have 5 more, but that's.
Well, I think as you get older too, I mean, can I say this on the podcast? I'm going to be 40 in February, you know, like, which, you know, like I'm getting old and I'm getting older and like running a business. I think it's aged me, actually, you know. It's physically hard work, and it's, you know, mentally stressful. And so my priorities are different in terms of, like, I don't think I'm going to change my career again, you know.
Right.
But do I, like, imagine, well, like, could I open up another kind of food establishment somewhere, you know? Could I, like, I don't know, you know, I'm not sure if there's, anyway, I can't look into the future that far. I am still working on, you know, just making sure this place, like, survives. Oh, sure. And that's good enough. That's good enough for now. And I'd like to be able to take a holiday occasionally.
Yes.
Spend some time with my husband and our dog, and, you know, you know, not be chained to it. So yeah, it'd be, like, really great once it doesn't need me anymore.
The worst one for me was when customers would come in and bring pictures of the bakeries they went to in Paris, right?
Yeah. Oh,
someone
that
bring me videos,
all the time. Yeah.
And it
yeah.
was like, I'm never, you know, at the time I felt like I'm never going to get there, you know. And since I've been lucky enough to go, but it comes.
Yeah,
for sure it does.
Well, yeah, it does get easier, and I often think, like, oh my god, if I knew then what I know now about it, would I have done it? I don't know. Like, it's like, it's a difficult thing to own your own business, you know.
Sure.
And it's not so much the, like, once we figured out, you know, our formulas and our recipes, and, you know, we got those things sort of, you know, consistent, so the public could, you know, rely on our customers could rely on, this is what a croissant is always going to look like at the Penny Loaf.
Yeah.
Then, you know, things got easier, but it is, like, it's HR, and it's, you know, the financial burden of it, and worrying about, you know, can I pay this bill this month? And, you know, but no, I think I would have done it. Like, I have no regrets about, I have no regrets when I look back at, you know, all sorts of things that I've done in my life. And, God, this is like a therapy session. Thank you. We're not really talking about baking anymore.
It's not, like, not the intention, but as long as it's helpful.
It's as, like, transition, career, professional development.
Well, I've talked with an awful lot of career changers that got into this, and heck, I'm one too, right? Like, I started in my backyard, and, you know, then went to SFBI for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And said, okay, yeah, I guess we'll sign a lease now, right? So,
yeah,
you know, I hear you. And
it's funny that everybody thinks, like, oh, owning a little small, like, food establishment is the thing to do when you're having a career change.
That's part of the, that's part of why I started this, because I know that there's a lot of aspiring bakery owners that listen to this, and the advice that I got before I started talking to people like Tracy or Nancy Rubiliak in Edmonton, and that wasn't discouraging, but it was realistic, right? It's look you square in the eye and say, okay, do you know what you're getting in for? And no, then go for it. Like,
well, and sometimes it's better to not know. Like I was saying, like, if you know how hard it's going to be, you know, and how many sleepless nights you're going to have, you might think, no, I'm not going to, but I mean, I think it's great. Like I said, when I walk up to that bakery, some, like, summer mornings, I'll meander over, and I just, like, see it, and I just think, oh my god, it's, like, I don't know, it's kind of what I wanted to, it's what I wanted to have happen. Yeah. So, you know,
I love, like, open. And do you get to spend time in the front as well?
Yeah. And more so now, which is really good, because my favorite thing is Saturday afternoon opening, you know. I don't like slicing all that bread, but you know, having conversations with, like, the locals.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think we should have a calendar called Pets of the Penny Loaf, because, you know, people come and they tie up their dog and come in, and they sit on the benches outside in the summer. And yeah, it's lovely. It's great, because it feels like what you imagine, and maybe it's too nostalgic to, like, you know, I mean, I grew up in, you know, the 80s and the 90s, and there weren't a lot of mom and pop shops like at that point, you know.
No. And they were all going away if there were any.
They were all going, exactly. They were all, like, closing up, and it was big box store land in the mall. And and so to think, like, you know, I'll put on some crooner music, some Sinatra, and, you know, it just feels, like, lovely. It feels like like I imagine, you know, something going on in New York, you know.
Sure.
And,
sure.
You know, I don't know. I just hope that, like, translates, and people sort of see it as it's not a big marketing ploy. It's actually just how I want it to feel when you come into my shop. So
absolutely. And you know, and I felt it at my place, and I felt it at your place too, with the people in line, and you can see see the excitement in their eyes when they're looking at the display and they're deciding what to get. And if someone's bringing their friend for the first time or so-and-so from out of town. And that's so heartwarming that it's sort of like, hey, you've got to see this little gem of a place, right? It's
Having new customers come in, tending to the existing customers, the people who live in the neighborhood who, you know that they want spelt bread on Thursday like their loaf has to be there. And, that's the best part of it,
where bakers and bakeries can be the heart, the hub of the community, can be the heart of the community. And
they're so local, right? Yeah. So the city, Winnipeg, and I'm sure other cities can afford to have, a bakery in every neighborhood, and that services, the needs of their community. Yeah. And that's great. So it doesn't have to feel like intense competition. Like there's some really great bakeries in the city, that I don't know whether you got to any of them, but
no, I would definitely not this recommend time.
Going and checking out, if you're ever passing through Winnipeg again, there's some really great shops that have opened up or existing ones. And I don't feel, it feels more like we work together, like on Instagram, I like everybody's posts.
Yeah.
When we run out of something, on a holiday, I'll call over to a bakery and say, I'm really sorry, I'm sending a bunch of people over your way, we ran out of pumpkin pie. Do you have any more, So it's not competitive in that sense.
It's
so
kind of, we're all out trying to feed the people. Right. So
exactly. No. And there's room for that, Yeah.
Well, and Winnipeg's a big enough city. Libby, our friend that we stayed with, lives in the northeast corner, so there's a little airport north of you guys, like a small
one.
And her partner's a air traffic controller out there, so they live out that way. They were saying, we found some good sourdough finally, since they moved back to Winnipeg, but they had to drive a heck of a ways to get there. So it's and that's the you guys are blessed with the smaller neighborhoods that you can support your own guy, right? Your own.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I love it.
And there's definitely good sourdough. We're not the only good sourdough in the city,
But don't sell yours short. It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty good. It is really good. I can't. That's the reason why we sell sourdough is because my husband, he's actually from Poland and he couldn't find any good bread. I mean, he's been here for a long time.
Yeah. But
he was always like, what is this cotton candy bread, and so when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do in baking school, what was I going to focus on? You could have done anything. I could have done cake decorating,
sure,
whatever, and I thought, well, I'll learn how to make bread for him. And so that's where that,
that's awesome,
started. That's how it started. So I think it's pretty good, and I can't eat any other bread now. Mm-hmm. I can eat it with nothing on it. Yep. I can eat it 3 days old. It's so good.
My treat now when I'm baking in the backyard is if I've got a little scrap of dough of just my plain country sourdough, I'll make a little loaf for me. It's a bigger than a roll, but not much, And that's my Saturday treat. And it's the best thing ever. It's the best part of my week.
If somebody was to say to me, well, what's your favorite thing in the bakery? Of course, cakes and cookies are great. But I would way rather have a hunk of sourdough bread than anything.
Hey, so tell me about that beast of an oven. Why did you decide to go wood fired?
Okay. So again, I was trying to find the most authentic way to make bread.
Right.
I didn't know, and I've since, read cause I did a lot of, sort of soul searching around, what I wanted to do in terms of baking the bread in California. So, I read Alan Scott's book and the new revised version. And when I was out there, I traveled around and looked at.
Did you get up to Petaluma and?
Right on. Literally, I lived on a little organic farm. I rented a cabin.
Nice.
On a little organic farm, and that's what I did. I mean, I didn't know anyone. I was alone out there, so I would just take drives out there. I basically went there every weekend or every time I wasn't driving, so, or I wasn't working. going to San Francisco was fun too.
Yes.
But I remember reading something that Chad Robertson had said that, you know, like he started baking on a wood fired oven, and that, you know, he wouldn't in a million years do that again in like a commercial setting. Cause it's just, you know, it's not as efficient.
Yeah.
But for a small bakery, I think it's just fine. And it's got like, it's like an amazing thing to bake on. Like,
yeah,
it's got the cachet. It's cozy. It looks great. It, you know, heats the building. It bakes really great bread. You know, it's never going to break down unless, you know, something really terrible happens. It was actually in my lease that if I ever left when we didn't own the building, that I had to take the oven with me. There's no way we're going to have to take like a hammer to it. And, it's built on site.
Sure. Yeah.
So I was looking around and I thought, okay, well, you know what, this will add some interest and it'll yield a good product. So I started looking around, trying to figure out how I was going to build this thing.
Right.
So I looked at, you know, Munaney ovens and like packages, you know, that you could, yes, like just, you know, basically order the parts and,
yep,
and put it together yourself. I looked at trying to find a local masonry oven builder, but there aren't really any.
Nope.
There's an Alan Scott oven actually in Manitoba. Went and practiced on their oven.
Sorry, you cut out there. Is that the one up in Riverton?
Yeah, that's the one in Riverton. Yeah,
yeah. Right on.
So I went up there one December, basically all of December. I drove out, yeah, in like the blustery minus 45 weather, pitch black, so I could practice, you know, working on their oven. And then I thought, yes, okay, so this is it. So I actually even contacted Alan Scott's son to, yep, see if, like, he was apparently surfing in Australia somewhere, but he, oh, there's a cat. So apparently he was, you know, still in the business of doing it, but I couldn't locate him.
Right.
So I can't even remember how I got a hold of the people who ended up doing our oven, but they are actually, they're located in Toronto. And they're actual like professional masonry oven and heaters.
Oh, cool.
They this is what they do.
Yeah.
So they go all around the world. They do bread ovens and bagel ovens and, you know, they'll build, custom made oven or heaters for people's, right, homes. Yep. They're called Stove Master. Anyways, but they're like, they're great. So they came and they lived in my house for 2 weeks. And it was, like, it was a huge project to, sure, undertake. It's the oven sits on a steel bed that is actually like drilled into the floor,
yep,
and into the basement, and then there's these big concrete slabs that it sits in. And I was trying to find out how much it weighed before our conversation, but I can't remember.
Oh,
but
that's
it weighs,
okay,
it weighs a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's big.
It's a behemoth. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Remind me, what's the baking surface? About how big is that thing?
Well, you can get about 50 loaves,
wow,
in it at a time.
Okay.
So it's pretty big. And I mean, we're not such a big bakery that we could probably do. So on a busy Saturday, we probably pump out 170 loaves of bread.
Okay.
Which, you know, that doesn't, when I think about it, it doesn't sound like that much, but you know, that's enough. And that's enough for us to get as much heat out of the oven before, yeah, we have to fire it again.
Yeah.
So it's manageable. And again, it's just one person manning the oven. There's no, we don't have a conveyor belt to like get the bread in. So it's all hand peeled, thrown in the oven. So it's about 50 loaves. Depends on, you know, the size of your loaf and what you're doing. You know, you can bake strap pans in the oven too. You can do anything in that oven, you know, and it retains the heat forever. You could cook a turkey in there after.
Oh, and, sure.
You know, all sorts of things. Pizza, like, is super great in it. It's a real bread oven though. So if you see a pizza oven, it's domed. This is like, yeah, I don't know if you had a chance to look inside of it, but it's very shallow and it's domed, but it's built so that it's got a narrower,
narrow door. So
narrower, like, yeah, box on the inside, yeah, so that the steam from the raw dough actually ends up being what steams your bread.
Absolutely.
We still add steam with a sprayer, but yeah, but that's the whole point of it. So it's super fun. And you know, when you get in there and you bake on it, cleaning it out, scraping out the ashes, you know, and throwing your first load in, it's like, it's wonderful. You know?
Yeah. No, it's the best. I've got an Alan Scott oven in the backyard that I built.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when we opened our bakery, I didn't have the guts. So I got a, I didn't have the guts of dealing with the city and all of that stuff on.
You know what? It's nothing. It's, it's zoned like a fireplace.
Wow.
So it's actually like, I don't have, like ventilation, like a normal restaurant would have.
Yeah.
So right. I got to save the money on that. I mean, if I ever became a more of a restaurant, I probably would have to put that in at some point, but yeah, no, it was nothing. I mean, you had to have it, certified by like a specialist and, but it wasn't, it's a fireplace.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
So they took about 2 weeks to get it.
Yeah, it was about 2 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. I think they lived in our house for 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for you. Mine. Yeah. See, mine's, 3.5 by 4 feet inside. So I can do about 16 to 18 loaves.
Yeah.
And, it took me a year, but I did it myself.
Well, exactly. Oh, I went to, there's a school in, Grand Marais, Minnesota.
Right.
The North House. Oh my God. I might be losing the.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
It's a folk school. Like they teach cheese making and making canoes and whatever. So I actually went and learned how to make an oven. We built an oven in the course of 5 days, I think it was. Because I thought at one point, well, maybe I could just build this oven myself. No way. There's just no way. Like, well, exactly. It would take a year.
Yeah.
Right? And, a lot of trial and error. Yeah. And I wasn't planning on being a masonry oven builder. So,
And I haven't laid a brick since, right?
Like, yeah, exactly. That's it. One time, that's all you need to do.
Yeah, I took the workshop from Alan and then I built my own and that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's inexpensive. It was a much more inexpensive oven to build than it was to buy a commercial deck oven that, you know, had all the bells and whistles in it. So, I don't know.
Well, and with you guys going every day, keeping it hot can be, a lot easier. I just bake 2 days a week in it and I let it cool off too much in between.
Yeah. So you don't really need to, like we put a few crates of wood in it a day just to get it back up. Yeah. And it's,
that's awesome.
It's not hard. Yeah.
So cool. So cool. Yeah. And
I'm looking at the time. I don't know how long we have, an hour.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'll get you.
No.
And so I was just going to ask, is there an issue getting decent wood in Winnipeg?
No, not at all. Good. We have a really great wood delivery guy.
Awesome.
Comes, you know, maybe once a week, once every two weeks. You know, we have a big wood, like a locked wood container at the back and it's fine. And it's all, it's hard, seasoned wood and it's perfectly fine. Sometimes there's some variation and you know what? And that's like the funny thing. It's like bread. You sort of learn to work with it. You know, we know like if the oven doesn't fire as fast as it normally does, you know, we know we need to bring some wood inside and dry it out overnight. So you just sort of learn how to manage it. You know, it's like sourdough.
Yeah.
You know?
I think I read once, I think it was Tom Leonard that said that once he'd been working with a wood oven, we said once you learn the oven, it can be more consistent than a gas oven.
Yeah.
And I feel that, you know, 2 years of regular repetition in my oven, as small as it is, right? It's like, nah, you really get a feel for it. Just like you said, you can, you know, just sort of how the wood's burning and that, and how you're getting the core hot, you know what your next morning's going to be like.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And you know, you sort of learn, I mean, we bake at different times depending on like what the load is going to be. Sometimes we'll bake later in the day. You learn how to deal with the fact that like the front is cooler than the back.
Yep.
So you figure it out. It's not, in the beginning. Yeah. It was terrifying. And there was like ash everywhere and it was a mess. And don't tell anyone we've lit the dumpster on fire. but you know, we've learned to, you know, we've got procedures in place.
Yeah.
And like, you know, yeah, there was one morning when we first started where, I don't know, I guess I had like let the, it was just me, thankfully, I'd let the gases collect, I guess, too much while I was like firing the oven or heating it up. And all of a sudden my alarm started going off and like the fire department came, but it was like 2 a.m. So no one saw it and it was, it worked out all right. But yeah, but I had let, those were all like the trials and tribulations of, you know, starting this up and being like, I think we were the only one in the city who had a wood-fired oven at the time. So I'm sure the fire department was like, what the hell is going on here? who let this mad woman have a giant fireplace in the middle of Florida?
It just said fireplace. I don't know.
It's like... Yeah, exactly. But that has not happened since. Yeah. And we have learned, you know, how to use it safely and effectively. Yeah. So,
awesome. Yeah. Oh, good for you. So two quick questions for you. When I was skulking around your website, I have to say that like the photography on your site is amazing. Yeah. And I'm just wondering, like, is that you or do you have a, I guess, what story are you trying to tell with that? Because I was just blown away about how good everything looked.
Well, so in the beginning, did I get food photography taken in the beginning? Yes, I must have. Yeah, we did. We did that in the beginning, and like, so our products have changed so much in terms of like what's consistently now on the shelves that, you know, I've had to do that a couple of times. Sure. But, you know, our Instagram page and our Facebook feed, I don't know whether you looked at any of those. Those are mostly like staff stuff. Sometimes they're not like, you know, they don't look as professional as like you would like it to be, but you know, I don't want to get caught up in that social media pressure. Like it's a lot. Like I stress out about, you know, how good does this stuff look online? I mean, and is that really the main focus, or is that what it should be?
No, well, good Lord. And once you're into it, like I don't know how many bakers I follow on my Instagram. It can get depressing if my head's not on straight when I go on.
Oh yeah. I look at it and I'm like, my God, our bread doesn't look like that. And you know, why did someone post two pictures of morning buns 2 days in a row? We look like, it's like an amateur hour over here, but I don't know whether it, you know, I don't know whether it matters. I mean, I want it to look nice, but I also want it to be sort of organic. And I know that there is some benefit to sometimes posting, you know, shots of staff and, you know,
absolutely
doing like, you know, crazy things in the bakery and, you know, doing some stories and stuff that are a bit more natural as opposed to so stylized. But certainly you know, people do like it when a picture is well curated, so we do that. As for our website, I have a really great manager who who's been working with me for a while, and we sort of stepped up our game on all of that sort of stuff. So we had redone the website, and it's funny because websites seem to be sort of obsolete now. Like, I don't know. I never look at our website. Yeah. I probably should more often, but it seems to be Instagram, and even less so Facebook now, but mostly Instagram seems to be the way we are supposed to be conveying messages now. And people don't really communicate with us through our website. So, it's a funny thing, you know.
Well, when I had my bakery was when right when Facebook started changing their rules on how their pages went. So, you know, I got a whole bunch of followers or fans or, you know, people that liked my page. And then 1 year in, all of a sudden they throttled it back, right? Where now you put a post up and they'd maybe show 10% of the people and whatever. And I was like, oh, that was sort of the end of Facebook, you know, but.
Yeah. Sometimes we boost our posts, but you know, most of it's organic. Yeah. Like the Facebook stuff or the Instagram stuff. I don't know, the other day we all celebrated. We had like, when we hit the 4,000 mark. But then again, like I have a friend who owns a donut shop here, and I'm like, why do you have like over 10 or 20,000 followers? Like, how did that happen? And so I don't know what the combination of, you know, what you need to do to get that many followers, but, you know, I don't know. I just want to make good bread. I just want to make good product, you know.
I found that in the end, the vast majority of my customers didn't read my email newsletter that I sent out. Didn't see me on Facebook. Didn't see my Instagram. If I could get them to read the chalkboard when they came in saying, you know, order your Christmas baking, that was a win, right?
We put out a little notice on email that we don't send anything else out. You know, that's the only thing that we send out, and it's just like the deal of the month.
Yeah.
And people use it, you know, or some people use it. So it's okay. You know, I think you just have to like, try and figure out what the combination of things are that you're going to do to try and sell your product. I mean, we don't do a lot of you know, advertising in a newspaper. Like, I just can't afford like $1,000 ad in the free press or whatever, you know. It's, and I don't know, I don't know how well it would, you know, I'm not savvy enough to know if that works.
Well, there's no way of finding out. Like, I took an ad out once in our local independent thing. We had one, you know, best bakery reader poll kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I took out one of these thank you ads, and as a test, I put a coupon on there. It said, just bring this in for a free loaf of bread or something like that, or half off.
Yeah.
And two people brought it in. So I, out of the $400 I spent on the ad, two people claimed this.
Exactly. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think going to things like farmers markets have yielded more, marketing like people have come back into the store after they've seen us somewhere else in the city. So I don't know, you know, awesome. We'll see.
And what gets you excited these days? What's the
well, okay. I love Christmas.
There you go. Yeah.
I love, somebody sent me an article the other day about people who decorate early seem to be happier. I don't know. There's something about like if you're surrounded by nostalgia and those kinds of things, like it gets like, you know, the endorphins in your brain going for a longer period of time. Yeah. I also put Christmas away or the holidays away, like right after it's over, but that lead up is really great. So my mom actually lives, she lives out of town, and she brought me a bunch of like pine boughs and a couple of like small like Christmas trees and stuff to plant in the front. And we, you know, so all that stuff is starting, and all those childhood sort of things that make me kind of giddy as a, you know, as a business owner. So I can like sort of project, this is what I want my Christmas bakery to look like, you know, or my holiday bakery to look like. Yeah. So that's like exciting right now. We're busy, like, it's definitely a democracy in the bakery in terms of finding out what we should be putting on the Christmas menu. There are certainly things that, or the holiday menu, certainly there are things that have to come back because people expect them, but we try and do different things every year. You know, I ask my staff if they have like a traditional cookie that they, you know, had when they were kids, because all those things, those are like tried and true recipes that people love and will come for, you know. So so I really like that. You know, we've been prepping that. We've had our, we make a sourdough bread with basically like fruitcake filling in it. Yep. So, you know, like we've had like our rum soaked fruit for a month, you know, soaking, and, you know, starting to smell like Christmassy things in there. And, awesome. And the music will start soon, which will terrorize a lot of my staff. But yeah, like I'm a giant kid when it comes to the holiday season.
Music seems to be a big thing for you as well. I noticed that just reading some of the stuff on your website of, you know, choice of playlist.
And Well, I want my staff to be happy. And, you know, if they want to listen to, you know, classical music all day, that's fine with me. But if they want to listen to, you know, they're starting their day off and they're opening up the bakery and they need something more high energy, they're more than welcome to do that. But for me, like it was like the, it's like my favorite things. First thing I do when I get in, I like load up what I'm going to listen to. Sometimes it's podcasts in the middle of the night. I'm like a tried and true podcaster. I listen to it. I catch up on like the news and what's going on in the world in the middle of the night. But as soon as like the sun is coming up, you know, it's the best time to put on some, I don't know, whatever strikes your fancy. But I like old timey music. I'm not gonna lie, we listen to Celine Dion a lot in the bakery. Sure. I don't know.
If as long as the product comes out looking good, you're all right with that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right on.
Oh yeah, it's really like I just want it to be not like for my staff. It's really important that they enjoy coming to work as much as they can, because it's work. You know, you don't always enjoy coming to work, but if they can, you know, eat some good food, listen to some good music, get paid a decent, you know, amount, if I can respond to their, you know, physical and mental health needs, you know, because, you know, we're all human and we all have issues that, you know, we, you know, just because we have to go to work, they don't go away. So, you know, we could be friendlier, kinder to our staff. That's what I want. Awesome. So,
well, that's great, man. Like, I'll tell you, I think you've got a really good thing going there. I'm excited for the next 5 years for you.
Well, thank you.
And I have some really good reasons to start getting back to Winnipeg more now. Because
oh, excellent. Yeah, you know, yeah.
I used to come out for the folk festival all the time before we had kids, and then realized this last time we were out, it's been 15 years since I'd been out there.
So, oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. Well, so you want to come back. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and definitely we'll be stopping by. So I really
appreciate that. Sounds great.
Thank you for taking the time. I hope just have a great holiday season too, and enjoy it and pace yourself, because my goodness, this is like it's also the craziest time of year, isn't it? Like, yeah,
it is. It's the most hectic time, but you know, but like that's the,
you're feeding the people.
There's a lot of joy in it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. So thank you so much. I really, really appreciate the fact that you took the time to come to my bakery and you found me and you recruited me for this.
Yeah.
I feel really like fortunate to be among like the people that you've interviewed. Awesome. It's quite something. Well, I never would have thought it, you know, but yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks a bunch.
Okay.
Yay. So that was Suzanne. Hooray. I'm so glad that she came on the show. We have a lot in common. I feel like I've found a new cousin or something, that I need to spend a lot more time with her and hang out at her place a lot more. It's only 6 hours away, so we're almost neighbors. So she's the best. Her bakery is lovely, and that beast of a wood-fired oven that she has is really remarkable. Like, it's a real piece of quality masonry there, and it's so cool that they've got it figured out and they got it grooved, and they're making some really great bread and other things as well. Really nice products there. So thank you very much for listening this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you learned a bunch from Suzanne's experience. Certainly shows you how, if you don't grow up in the bakery field, you can still make this go, but it takes an awful lot of work and an awful lot of perseverance. And she's a very brave woman to jump into this, but it's going really well for her. And that's awesome. So hope you like the show. Have an awesome week. I will probably talk to you from the road in New York, hopefully, if I get decent internet. So have a great week. Pace yourselves this week. 3 weeks till Christmas. Keep it going, and happy baking. See you soon.